Ali alayhi salam said, "Anger is a kind of madness, because the victim to it repents afterwards. If he does not repent, his madness is confirmed."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, Imam Ali alayhi salam is one of the most beautiful personalities in the history of Islam, most probably only following the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. We find that this personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam is truly universal. Universal in the sense that it can withstand the waves of time and era. The things which Imam Ali alayhi salam stood for as far as his personality, his morals, his ethics, his statements, his words of wisdom, his actions, they all transcend time, and we find that even to the present day they are practical and they are statements and words of wisdom which can guide us even in this present day, despite the passing of thousands of years. One of the things that we find is that Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, was a part, and that more so, an integral part of the early battles in the defense of Islam. Now, of course, as in any war, you have two sides that are fighting one another. And when it comes to the divinely appointed imams, we find that the battles that occurred between the imams and the governmental establishments or the opposition, we find that this is a battle between truth and falsehood. In the modern era, there are many times where this is not the case. Many times, both sides are the sides of falsehood that are fighting one another. But even in the present day, yes, there are certain situations where we find that the side of truth is fighting with the side of falsehood. Now, as in any war, you have people that are killed, you have people that are martyred, and you have people that are captives. But here, it's really interesting. So in a war, a captive or a prisoner of war is usually probably one of the worst things that can possibly happen to an individual. I mean, if you win, of course you win. You are victorious. What can be better than that? But on the other hand, if you lose, either you die or you are martyred or you're wounded. But the worst possible scenario is for you to be captured by the enemy, and that too by an enemy who is merciless, who has no mercy, who has no compassion, who has no kindness towards you as an individual. Now, this kind of captive is really something, as we said, that is not preferable. It is quite a bad situation to be in. Well, Imam Ali alayhi salam here talks about a different kind of captive. He says, "Ya ayyuhan nas, O people, if you extend your hand in need towards another person, you will certainly become their captive." Allahu Akbar. When we think of the word captive, we only think of a prisoner of war, or we only think of an individual who is in shackles, an individual who is in chains, an individual who has become enslaved or is imprisoned. And here, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, this same kind of an individual who is chained and enslaved and is imprisoned, this kind of a condition for a human being will come about if they extend their hand in begging towards another person. And so, dear friends, begging from another person, humiliating one's self, degrading one's self-respect and one's self-honor and one's dignity in order to acquire some kind of financial or material aspect or means. This degrading of yourself and one's self leads to one becoming a captive, a prisoner, somebody who has become imprisoned by the other person. So if you truly want to be free, then you must turn towards Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, for all of our needs. But of course, we have to work hard to attain our needs. And only then will we be able to live freely, with freedom, and with independence. A very profound lesson indeed, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli who's going to talk about today's topic.
He was a man of taqwa, God consciousness, epitomized in all his actions and words. He would define taqwa as ta'atun lil jaleel, obedience to the Almighty, wa'amalun bil tanzeel, and to work with whatever has been revealed, wal isti'dad li yawm ar-rahil, and to be prepared for the day of qiyamah. He was a man that was not only born in the house of Allah, martyred in the house of Allah, but he was all the epitome of tawheed and the oneness of the Almighty subhanahu wa ta'ala. The voice of human justice. The man who would seek to implement Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's laws everywhere around, wherever he would deal with people. Once he saw, whilst walking with Qambar, a family that were in distress. He went to help this particular lady with her orphans. He prepared the food for them. He played with the children. And when Qambar, his servant, said, "Oh, Master Ali, why did you do this?" He said, "I saw them crying. I wanted them to be delightful and happy." The father of the orphans, the man of generosity and kindness, the individual who would espouse love, compassion, consideration and servitude towards the others, praised in the Quran, him and his family for giving others what he needed himself. He gave the poor, he gave the captive, and he gave the needy their food on 3 consecutive days.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
Some commentators think US Democrats have moved too far to the left, too far from the so-called center. We now present you an article written by Robert Reich, a former US Secretary of Labor and a professor of public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. The piece is titled, "The US Republican Party is Terrible, So Why May Democrats Lose to Them This Year?" Much of today's Republican Party is treacherous and treasonous. So why are Democrats facing midterm elections that, according to most political observers, they're likely to lose? Having been a loyal Democrat for some 70 years, including a stint as a cabinet secretary, it pains me to say this. The Democratic Party has lost its way. Some commentators think Democrats have moved too far to the left, too far from the so-called center. But this is utter rubbish. Where's the center between democracy and authoritarianism? And why would Democrats want to be there? Others think President Biden hasn't been sufficiently angry or outraged. But what good would that do? After 4 years of Donald Trump, why would anyone want more anger and outrage? The real failure of the Democratic Party is its loss of the American working class. As Democratic pollster Stanley Greenberg concluded after the 2016 presidential election, Democrats don't have a white working class problem. They have a working class problem, which progressives have been reluctant to address honestly or boldly. The fact is that Democrats have lost support with all working class voters across the electorate. The working class used to be bedrock of the Democratic Party, but what happened? During the first 2 years of the Clinton, Obama, and Biden administrations, when Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, they purportedly scored some victories for working families. For example, the Affordable Care Act, an expanded earned income tax credit, and the Family and Medical Leave Act. But they also allowed the middle class to hollow out and the working class to sink. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton passed free trade agreements without providing millions of blue-collar workers who consequently lost their jobs a means of getting new ones that paid at least as well. His North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, and plan for China to join the World Trade Organization undermined the wages and economic security of manufacturing workers across America, hollowing out vast swathes of the Rust Belt. Bill Clinton also deregulated Wall Street. This led to the financial crisis of 2008, in which Barack Obama bailed out the biggest banks and bankers, but did nothing for homeowners, many of whom owed more on their homes than their homes were worth. Barack Obama didn't demand as a condition for the bailout that banks refrain from foreclosing on underwater homeowners. Nor did Obama demand an overhaul of the banking system. Instead, he allowed Wall Street to water down attempts at re-regulation. Both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama stood by as corporations hammered trade unions. They failed to reform labor laws to allow workers to form unions with a simple up or down majority vote, or even to impose meaningful penalties on companies that violated labor protections. Joe Biden has supported labor law reform but hasn't fought for it, leaving the protecting the right to organize act to die inside his ill-fated Build Back Better Act. Bill Clinton and Barack Obama allowed antitrust enforcement to ossify, enabling large corporations to grow far larger and major industries to become more concentrated. Joe Biden claims he is trying to revive antitrust enforcement, but hasn't made it a centerpiece of his administration. Both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama depended on big money from corporations and the wealthy. Both turned their backs on campaign finance reform. Barack Obama was the first presidential nominee since Richard Nixon to reject public financing in his primary and general election campaigns. And he never followed up on his re-election promise to pursue a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United versus FEC, the 2010 Supreme Court opinion opening the floodgates to big money in American politics. Joe Biden has tried to supposedly regain the trust of the working class Americans, but Democratic lawmakers, most obviously and conspicuously Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, have blocked measures that would have lowered the cost of childcare, the cost of elder care, prescription drugs, healthcare and education. They've blocked a higher minimum wage and paid family leave. Yet neither Senator Joe Manchin nor Senator Kyrsten Sinema, nor any other Democrat who has failed to support Biden's agenda has suffered any consequences. Why hasn't Biden done more to rally the working class and build a coalition to grab back power from the emerging oligarchy? Presumably for the same reasons that Bill Clinton and Barack Obama didn't. The Democratic Party continues to prioritize the votes of suburban swing voters who supposedly determine electoral outcomes. And it still depends on money from big corporations and the wealthy. The most powerful force in American politics today is anti-establishment fury at a rigged system. There is no longer a left or a right. There is no longer a moderate center in American politics. And the real choice is either Republican authoritarian populism or Democratic progressive populism. Democrats cannot defeat authoritarian populism without an agenda of radical democratic reform, a pro-democracy anti-establishment movement. Democrats must stand squarely on the side of working people against oligarchy. They must form a united coalition of people of all races, of all genders and classes to unrig the system. Trumpism is not the cause of our divided nation. It is the symptom of a rigged system that was already dividing us.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini al-Islami, dini wal-Azam, ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We are going to talk about the rules of Hajj, in fact, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, as always, our guest speaker in the studio. Sheikh Javid, since we are talking about, the rules of Hajj Tamattu, and more in particular, we were talking about, our episode from the last, your previous episode onward, about the prohibitions of Ihram. Let's continue some of these, prohibitions or those things which are not allowed for any pilgrims to Mecca. Would you?
Yes, sure. We have already discussed some of the prohibitions, and of course, the one of the things which is prohibited for a pilgrim is, especially for women, is to apply collyrium, which is called surma. Okay. It's not permissible for a woman or for a man to apply collyrium or surma.
Yes.
For example, men, women tend to wear makeup and wear, collyrium, mascara, and different things. Yeah. And they might want to apply lotion or things like that, which is not permissible, of course. Yes, if you want to apply sunscreen, it does not have fragrance. There's mm-hmm. no objection because you want to protect your skin. Okay,
right.
That's okay because in the hot season you can do that.
But what about some of the ointment for medical purposes?
That's also permissible mm-hmm. if there's ointment and of course you want to apply it. There is no objection to you in doing so. Then we have looking in mirror. Okay, in a mirror, there are mirrors here and there. Especially when you want to enter a hotel or a restaurant and there are mirrors in front of you. And these rules are applicable to, Shia Muslims. Sunnis might not have these restrictions, okay?
Right.
So they might want to look into mirrors. That is what we need to know. And we as Shia Muslims need to follow the religious authorities we have. And of course, in this program, we are discussing the rules according mm-hmm. to the fatwa or the verdicts of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. So looking in a mirror is not permissible. And if a person happens to look in a mirror, he has to pay the penalty or the kafara. Then we have wearing shoes. Wearing shoes is not permissible for men.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are special slippers or flip-flops which a man should wear. So the upper part of the shoes and the feet must not be covered. You cannot wear socks. You must wear special flip-flops, and in order to avoid covering your feet. So yeah,
but these shoes, most of these shoes are sewn.
No,
you know?
That's not called clothing. You know, it is, of course. You need to wear something. Footwear is necessary. You can walk barefooted, but if you want to wear something, you should wear something which does not cover your feet.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the upper part of your, or the upper sole of your foot.
Yeah, the sole. Yeah.
The sole should not be covered.
I see.
Then lying is absolutely forbidden. It's always forbidden, but lying, especially in the for a pilgrim, is absolutely forbidden. Quarreling is forbidden. No one has a right to quarrel with other pilgrims while performing Hajj, because it is a season. It is an occasion for reuniting, for showing
for peace and prosperity.
And
yes.
Prosperity, sure. So quarreling is forbidden. Killing lice or other, you know, insects found on the humans. Okay, if you find any insects on your body, walking, like for example, if there are cockroaches, or if there are lice, or if there are insects, flies. Okay,
mosquitoes, yeah, flies. Yeah,
yeah. You cannot kill them. You should just simply push them aside. Okay,
drive them away.
Yeah, and killing insects, animals will make atonement obligatory.
I see.
And then beautifying oneself. Okay, I did say that wearing makeup is not permissible. Beautifying oneself, wearing jewelry, wearing adornments or things like that is absolutely forbidden, and no one can do it.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take another break, or a short break here. And we'll be back and continue our program. Some of these rules regarding the prohibitions of Ihram here on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We are talking about the rules of prohibitions of Ihram according to Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, you were talking about those rules. If there are anything left, I'd appreciate you actually to shed some light on it.
Sure. One of the prohibitions of Ihram is to apply oil. Okay, there are many pilgrims, especially Indians and Pakistanis, who are very much in the habit of applying oil, and necessary or unnecessary, they do it.
What is it for?
They apply oil to their hair, you know, to keep the to keep their hair tidy, or to keep their hair strong. And of course, applying oil has its fragrance as well.
Uh-huh.
So it's not permissible to apply oil. Oil is a term that can refer to many different things. Lotion is also included. For example, lotion is also a kind of liquid that's applied to the body. So,
but what about moisturizing, for example, the skin?
If it's not necessary, it's not permissible to use moisturizers.
Except for some medical purposes,
yeah,
right?
If
you have a condition,
unless necessary, one should not apply such things. Then we have removing hair from the body. It's not permissible to pluck your hair. Ladies cannot pluck their eyebrows or pluck their hair unless the hair falls off itself.
Right.
It's not permissible for a person, man or woman, to remove his or her hair, because you will have to wait. If you are performing Umrah, you will have to wait until you are supposed to perform Taqsir. Taqsir is when you have completed the Sa'i and you have performed the Tawaf, and then after Tawaf you will perform Taqsir. Taqsir means that you cut short your hair or your nail. That's when you are allowed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then we have halq. Halq also means to shave, okay? Shaving is the last practice before the Tawaf al-Nisa. Of course, you are supposed to perform halq, which means that you will clean shave, or you will shave your hair, and that is when you are allowed to do so. Otherwise, before you complete the Hajj rituals, you are not allowed to pluck your hair. Then we have covering the head by males, or driving, diving in water, even by females, you know. So to understand the rules better, I want to say that there are some, you know, the weather is hot there. Many people might want to take an umbrella, you know, and walk and use the umbrella to cover themselves and to walk under the shadow. Walking under the shadow is not permissible for a person who moves from the station, from Miqat, towards Mecca. Of course, once you arrive in Mecca, this restriction is removed. Okay,
right.
Because while you are walking in the streets of Mecca, okay, shadow is there. You'll walk into the hotel, but as long as you have not reached there, you cannot walk.
Use an umbrella, you mean?
You cannot use an umbrella. You cannot cover your head. You cannot wear a hat or something, or a cap to cover your head.
Even so, despite the fact that some of these, time frames, I'm talking about the Zilhijjah time or month, which fall into the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes really extremely hot. In Saudi Arabia. So
there are two things. Of course, the weather is hot there, but we need to distinguish between covering the head and walking under the shadow. These are two different things.
Uh-huh.
Okay, sometimes there are elderly people. They always cover their head, even if they are not performing Hajj. So covering the head is not permissible. It is necessary to remove the cap, to take it off and walk without wearing anything, okay?
I see.
But walking under the shadow, it's not permissible, and regardless of whether you are a man or a woman, okay? Covering the head for ladies is a must. It is obligatory. They should cover their head and hair and neck and everything,
mm-hmm.
except for their faces,
right.
and hands up to the wrist. So as for walking under the shadow is concerned, of course, they cannot walk under the shadow whilst they are wearing ihram and moving towards Mecca.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, for your nice elaboration and shedding light on the rules about the prohibitions of ihram here in the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
ما به چهار پنج شکل نسبت به قرآن ادهان و سستی داریم.
We people take the Holy Quran lightly for several reasons. Sometimes we cannot recite the Quran properly. Now in this case, we can see many students and experts with various skills who are unable to read out the Quran properly. Dear brothers and sisters, just look at the last verse of Surah Muzzammil to see how important the position of the Quran is. In this verse, Allah recalls people one time about Salat and one time about Zakat, but two times about the Holy Quran. The exact wording is this: so recite as much of the Quran as is feasible.
این کلمه تو این آیه دو بار تکرار شده. نماز یه بار، اقیم الصلاة.
This sentence is repeated two times in this verse of the Quran. Now, dear youths, this verse and other verses show us the importance of reciting the Holy Quran. We also can listen to the recorded audio of the Quran in our cars or houses, and gradually we can memorize the Holy Quran. Even when we are in our workplace, whether a shop or a company, we can listen to the Holy Quran recitation. And it is very good if we listen to its translation in our mother tongue too. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
in the limelight.
German institutions repress Palestinians and supporters of Palestinian rights using legal harassment, smears, censorship, and violence. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Ali Abu Nima, journalist. This article is published under the heading Deutsche Welle illegally fired Palestinian journalist. German court rules. Here's the details. A court in Germany has declared that Deutsche Welle unlawfully fired a Palestinian journalist based on false accusations of anti-Semitism. Maram Salem was among a group of Arab journalists fired by the government broadcaster following an official smear campaign accusing them of anti-Jewish bigotry because of comments or criticisms about the fake regime of Israel. Recently, the labor court in Bonn ruled Salem's dismissal to be invalid. The Facebook posts she was accused of were not anti-Semitic, and the termination was unlawful, the court stated during the hearing, according to a statement provided by her lawyer, Ahmad Abed. Salem explained that she has long been an advocate for women's rights, human rights, and animals' rights, and the accusations hit her hard. She called on Deutsche Welle to take responsibility, publicly apologize, and retract the allegations, the statement adds. The court threw out the anti-Semitism allegations of investigators Ahmad Mansour, Sabine Losester, and Beatrice Mansour, the statement says. Ahmad Mansour, a Palestinian-German psychologist with close ties to the Israeli lobby, the Sabine Losester, a former German justice minister, were commissioned by Deutsche Welle to investigate alleged anti-Semitism at the channel. Mansour's anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, and pro-Israel views have made him a darling of German media and state-funded institutions. In February, Deutsche Welle fired Salem along with several other journalists based on their reports. Deutsche Welle, which masquerades as a champion of free speech and a free press, had tried to portray Salem's mention of illegal Israeli occupation as anti-Semitic, according to the statement from her lawyer. The verdict shows that the smear campaigns against Palestinian women like me or Nimi al-Hassan can no longer succeed, Salem said, adding, "It was clear from the beginning that I am an innocent." Al-Hassan is a German journalist of Palestinian ancestry who had her science show cancelled by another broadcaster, Rand Funk. Al-Hassan's supposed transgression was liking Instagram post on the account of Jewish Voice for Peace, a well-known U.S.-based group that campaigns for Palestinian rights and opposes Zionism, the Zionist regime's state ideology. The Bonn Labor Court has made it clear that the strong accusations of anti-Semitism against Maram are without any basis, lawyer Abed said, adding, Deutsche Welle should now protectively stand in front of Maram instead of giving in to the agitation. The European Legal Support Center, a group that fights anti-Palestinian repression through litigation, hailed Salem's win as the first victory in the Deutsche Welle case. Farah Maragha, a Palestinian-Jordanian journalist fired amid the anti-Arab witch hunt, is also suing Deutsche Welle. Her case is still pending. German institutions repress Palestinians and supporters of Palestinian rights using legal harassment, smears, censorship, and violence. Germany's commitment to supporting the Zionist regime's crimes against Palestinians is so unyielding that it permits the Israeli regime to kill German citizens, including children, with total impunity. But in a hopeful sign that democracy and human rights may be possible, courts have been pushing back against anti-Palestinian repression. In another recent defeat for official censorship, the city of Stuttgart acknowledged that it has illegally removed information about a local Palestine support group from its website. The city has complied with a court ruling and reposted the information.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam my deen. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله Dear listeners, Youth Station, sisters and brothers from every single spot in the world, welcome home.
بسم الله النور
By the first verse of the Holy Quran
بسم الله النور
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Allah will bless you
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Protect you
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Help you
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
So ask His blessings
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
His protection
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
His help
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
الله الذي هو مدبر الأمور
Hope you are safe and sound. You are listening to IRB English Radio and this is Asma. Once more, I have been blessed to be with you. And with the inventor of Tutu Kachu.
Tutu Kachu, it's yes. Youth Station for you.
Yes.
It's
so
more
happy to meet you here again, brother.
It's great to have you too, sister. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I have got a wisdom tooth coming.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a little bit aggravating.
So now it's very bothering you.
Yeah. Does that mean I'm still a youth? No.
No. So, the concept of hijab is a very controversial concept, actually, all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is that from the beginning of human history, there has always been something like hijab in different nations, no matter what their religion was. For example, if you go back to the time where people did not have plenty much of understanding about religion, we can see in those old paintings that women had got some very long dresses and also they had some scarves on their head.
Well, I think that actually shows that they did have a very deep understanding of the religion. Mm-hmm. Back then, maybe not as broad as our understanding today.
Yeah,
because we have access to lots of different sources.
So you mean they were more religious?
They were much more religious. They were much better.
But the kind
of
religion they believed in were not just true religions.
Well, they had the basics down, right? It goes down to the idea that they always had the foundational principles. Mm-hmm. For example, family. They had a very strong family culture.
Yeah.
They had a very strong idea of respecting the authority figures and the elderly as well. You know, in today's time, we've lost a big part of that, a big chunk of that. Appreciating food, for example. You know, back then, if you took a piece of bread and took it to a neighbor or gave it to somebody, they would really appreciate that.
I would say many of the features related to primitive society was more better than what we have it right now.
Much better, yeah, absolutely.
And I think modernity and civilization and what they call it as facility would sort of spoil people.
Absolutely. They now, going back to your point, they also had a very strong concept of modesty, of chastity.
Yeah.
It was one of the big kind of principled ideas that they lived their lives by.
So from what you say, you relate chastity with hijab.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you read the William Golding, Spire? The Spire?
No. No, I should read it.
No. Don't. You probably don't want to read it, trust me. It's a really, really boring book.
Uh-huh.
But it's about a priest who wants to build a cathedral. He wants to build a cathedral with a very big spire.
Yeah.
And it's basically about how he becomes obsessed with building that spire. And his entire life becomes about building that spire. And the writer is basically showing the hypocrisy of the religious authorities, etc. But it's really interesting how even in that book, right? So William Golding, he was born in 1911. That doesn't give you much, other. He died in 1993.
Yeah.
Okay, so kind of recent history.
Mm-hmm.
In this book, I remember vividly, there's a scene where a woman is running away in the church and the priest sees her ankle.
Yeah.
Right, and then it describes how he saw a clumsy bit of her ankle. Back then, that was like, oh, it's her ankle. Ooh, you know that.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
That's how important chastity or hijab was back then for Christians. There is a video. You must have seen this video, right?
Yes.
It's from the archives. They were showing a city in England.
Yes.
I can't remember if it was Manchester or Liverpool, but they were all pretty much like this. And there are hundreds of people walking down the street, you know, going about their daily affairs. Some of them are going to school. Some of them are carrying shopping, groceries, etc. Every single one of the women is wearing hijab.
Exactly.
Have you seen this?
I haven't seen that special
Sister,
document.
This is only... we have video evidence of it.
That is very interesting. What was the name of that documentary?
It's not a documentary. They just found some random archives. Uh-huh. But if you type in archives, Manchester, England...
I told you, in old paintings that come from the old ages, you could see that women are all covered up.
Yep.
So it means that they did believe in a concept that was related to hijab. Now, there are different sorts of hijab.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about the other forms of hijab that we hear. And it's very interesting when it comes to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean, a hijab to the soul?
It's a very good question. So hijab is not just a physical covering. It's actually something which is within the human being.